Coming up, the surreal news. We've got a great show coming up for you. Welcome to the Surreal News Show. In the studio, we have Steve and Larry. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Steve.
And this is our last show of the year.
Wow, it's been a fast year.
What a year it's been.
Yes, it has been.
Surreal.
Absolutely.
All right, I'd like to introduce a topic this morning. Chinese snakes can predict earthquakes with head banging. This is late-breaking news, according to The Independent.
Are they rockers? Are they rockers or punks?
No, not quite.
Not that kind of head
banging?
What
they discovered is that snakes are very sensitive to earthquakes, as you can imagine. They sort of crawl along the ground. And if they get sort of uncomfortable, that means that an earthquake is coming. If the snakes try to bang their heads against walls, they know it's a big earthquake coming.
Well, it's not just music.
There's our early warning system.
Hmm.
All right, so we have a great show coming up today, and then I'm going to turn it over to our co-hosts here and do a lot of surreal news. At 15 minutes past the hour, we have Ellen Burksdell and her co-author Nancy, who wrote They Lost My Vote, which is the theme song for the Revote issue. And they're going to be on at 15 minutes past the hour. And then at 45 minutes past the hour, we have Reggie Mitchell, who's the lawyer for the People for the American Way, and he's going to give us an update. They were supposed to have a ruling by the judge this week about some of the evidence in getting the code available for the revote here in Sarasota, Florida, right here in District 13. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to you guys. Go for it.
Well, it's been a really strange year in the Sunshine State, even stranger than normal. We've got our very famous resident, Rush Limbaugh, the bastion of morality. He's arrested on prescription drug charges. O.J. Simpson, of course, we all know about him, If I Did It. Then Catherine Harris, the icon of the 2000 presidential election. Catherine, she left, of course, and her seat is again in question. Once again, Florida hits it. We've got a state senator convicted by a felony, then he files a bill to restore felons' voting rights. Where else but Florida could we find, customs agents could find a human skull complete with skin and hair in the suitcase of a woman returning home from Haiti? She said it was just a religious icon. Okay.
Well, you know, you mentioned, Steve, the If I Did It book and
yes.
How popular that's been with Florida readers, particularly
oh, yeah.
in the. But the Goldman family is suing O.J. now for the proceeds of that book for $1.1 million. And you may have noticed O.J. gave a press release that his next book was going to be called If I Had It.
A little background, just late breaking stuff that Judith Regan, who was fired personally by Murdoch for that project, then sued Murdoch because some of the allegations against her were in question about her anti-Semitic comments. Now there's lawsuits flying back and forth, and she's moving to Ireland.
Well, goodbye, Judith. We hate to see you go.
She might want to note in the paper this morning that when Kennedy made his trip to Ireland, he was fired on three times. So it may not be as safe a place as people think of.
If they could have done it.
If they could have done it. We hardly knew you.
Oh, no, that's right. Boy, there was. Did you hear about that guy that was trying to sell crack cocaine, and he went to the police officer sitting in his car, and he asked him if he wanted to buy some?
Yeah.
Well, he's got free room and board for the next 15 to 20.
But we notice in the surreal headlines that 94% of Spanish banknotes carry traces of cocaine. Perhaps he could just say he came back from a trip to Madrid.
94%. Do you know what it is here in the United States?
No.
Not sure the exact number, but it's about 75%.
Wow.
It's pretty high, too.
Wow. Boy. Well, how about that woman, 74-year-old woman who beat off an alligator in her house, and she beat it back with a hose. That's better than the naked guy who was rescued high on crack from the jaws of a 12-foot alligator, and the police very, very slowly extricated him from the jaws of death.
Surreal stuff in the news this year. Wow, what a year it's been. We got rid of Rumsfeld. We got rid of Bolton this year. Got rid of Foley. A lot of bad people went by the wayside this year.
I think they got rid of Condoleezza Rice because nobody's heard from her for so long.
And she's been getting lots of bad press recently.
And Shady, I think, is going to leave, too, because he was called pugnacious, and that really hurt his feelings. He's such a sensitive type of guy.
Who would call him pugnacious? Somebody with no reputation,
I don't know.
Right?
Absolutely. Somebody with no reputation.
Like the president.
Yes, yes. Well, I love Gerald Ford. I thought he did a great job as president, but I wish he would have said this stuff prior to his
passing. All right, so tell our readers, our listeners, what we're talking about.
Okay, yeah. Well, Gerald Ford was interviewed right after the invasion, before the invasion of Iraq, definitely against the invasion. He had some choice things to say about Dick Cheney, who was his chief of
staff. Now, he was interviewed by Bob Woodward under the condition that the interview would not be played until after his death. And then he conveniently dies, so now we get to hear it.
And now we get to hear it. You know, I had one little incident with Gerald Ford, which I thought was wonderful. I was actually skiing in Vail when he was president, and I'm waiting in line for a chairlift, and someone taps me on the shoulder and says, "Excuse me, do you mind if I cut in?" I turn around, it's the president of the United States. So, of course, I said, "By all means, go right ahead." And, of course, 20 Secret Service men got ahead of me as well, and I skied behind him for a while, and that's another long story. But I was just impressed that the President of the United States would be asking me, basically I was a 20-year-old then, if he could cut in front of me. Nowadays, I think President Bush probably would have commandeered the whole mountain if he could ski.
And Cheney would have shot you.
Cheney would have shot me, absolutely, without a second thought. So he was, to my way of thinking, a nice guy. And humble, and did the job for the country the way it should have been done.
Yeah, certainly that's what all the commentary is, that he came in as the right guy for the right time and soothed the... my wife and I bought our first house when he was president and paid, I think, 11.5% interest.
Wow.
So inflation is one of the things that really did him in.
His whip inflation now.
He will have those little buttons that said whip inflation's now.
Now, and, he's the only president and vice president in history to do what?
To not be elected.
Correct.
Yes. Yes, but it was a good choice, and in retrospect, the pardon, which of course is most controversial, I think it was good for the country. I think our country was held up for 2 years by Clinton's so-called impeachment hearings, and we had to get out of that, and we had to go on. And for that same reason, I don't think doing impeachment hearing for Bush would be a good thing either. I think we should just let him finish out his term and go on and get to the business of the country, the more important
things. I have one comment. Since you did mention Clinton's impeachment, the former Republican congressman who sparked Clinton's impeachment in the first place is now disillusioned, quitting the GOP. That's Bob Barr.
Yeah.
He served 8 years as a Republican. He lost his seat in 2002, and he announced that he's a proud, card-carrying libertarian, according to the AP, December 18th.
Boy, how long it takes us to get wisdom.
Well, he was one of the very, very conservative members of Congress, too, if you remember.
Yes, he was.
Policies, he represented his district very, very well.
All right, you mentioned something about Mitch Romney, Larry.
Yes, Mitch.
Educate us.
Well, I was in the land of the blue over the holidays. I had reason to go to Massachusetts and then to Vermont. And I have to tell you, if you wanted to spend some time in an environment that's very, very different than what most of us are used to around Manatee and Sarasota counties. It's a because it's not just individuals who, of course, we run into here, but it's the whole environment is very, very blue. Well, the Supreme Court was in the news. The Supreme Court of Massachusetts was in the news again this week for having refused to make a decision about gay marriage. But the story behind the story is that when the Supreme Court Massachusetts originally said that the Constitution did not prohibit gay marriages in Massachusetts, it was left to the legislature then to pass a law. Now, the legislature was beseeched by conservatives to pass a constitutional amendment that forbade gay marriages. And Romney and the conservatives had a petition of 17,000 votes, 17,000 signers, which isn't very much, to petition the legislature, but the legislature refused to put it on the docket and refused to put before itself a motion to start a constitutional amendment. And that's when Romney took it to the court. He has asked the courts to force the legislature to take this consideration up and to put before the voters of Massachusetts a constitutional amendment against gay marriage. The court basically said it's none of our business. It didn't say yes or no. It didn't say that there should or shouldn't be gay marriage. It said you can't ask the courts anymore to do the business of the legislature. Now, before we say that the courts are too liberal, the courts also chastised the legislature and said, we can't tell you how to do your business, but you have been very naughty by closing your doors before you took this up. So it asked the legislature to do its job. But the legislature, of course, is closed for the session, and there will be a new Democratic governor, and Mitt Romney will be able to take this nationally, as he says, this is what I tried to do for all of you.
It did come out of the news that he did this as a personal citizen, not as a governor, not in his official capacity.
And not as a potential presidential candidate either.
Yeah, there you go.
I love this business of these non-issues that they're trying to make into issues. We've got people dying, and they're afraid of a few people getting married or not getting married. It's almost funny if it weren't funny.
Well, of course, the rest of my time I was spending in Vermont, where it is very legal for gays to get married. And the issue is hardly ever comes up. I mean, even the people who fought against it, it was like a wave that kind of crashed on the beach and
it's a non-issue.
It is completely a non-issue.
It's like the flag burning. It's basically a non-issue. It's just a real hot spot with people.
Yes, it's surreal, Steve.
Surreal. Yep, exactly right. And that's where we are.
Well, while you're thinking of our next topic, let me mention this is WSLR, Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida, 96.5. And we have Ellen Burkstell and Nancy calling in a minute with They Lost My Vote song, which we're going to play in a minute. And then we have the People for the American Way lawyer calling in at 9:45 with an update on the re-vote issue. And speaking of waves crashing against the shore, there was that earthquake which sent a tsunami towards the Philippines.
Did they have snakes telling them it was coming?
In China, yes.
Yes, well, the Chinese didn't have the earthquake. You see, it worked.
There's some interesting science behind that came out, and what's been discovered is that some of the coral reefs off the shore helped to prevent the serious tsunami from coming. So you have about a several-foot wave or so which goes across the ocean, and then when it hits the shore, it gets amplified, and then it can be, you know, many, many feet, hundreds of feet, etc. But the corals, the hard corals, can help prevent that. And some of the latest research has come out against supporting that we should be saving our coral reefs. Coral reefs are very important.
We should definitely be doing that. And another grim reminder of global warming happened this morning. I was on the news this morning with this massive ice shelf in the Canadian Polar Sea that broke off an island and is considered one of the more alarming pieces of evidence that global warming has become more serious and is happening more quickly than we think.
That's right. Buy land in Orlando, you'll have beachfront property in no time.
Well, now there you go. Who says that you can't make lemonade out of lemons?
There you go. That's a typical Florida thing. Buy land, develop it. And the polar bears are on the endangered species list, too, now.
And that may force the Bush administration to actually deal with global warming by having them put on the endangered species list, according to the news that came out recently.
Yeah, that was an interesting backdoor way of actually getting some global warming legislation done. Let's see what happens with the polar bears.
Well, you know, the polar bears are probably the only thing that you can environmentally support without hurting any business. Except maybe the fur trade.
We're all for polar bears.
We're all for polar bears. We could really get behind polar bears.
We can. Yeah, well, talking about the environment, there's a ruptured pipeline now in the Gulf of Mexico, 20,000 gallons of oil. Well, I want to do a public shame on our senators and our Congress for allowing even more drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. They say it can't happen, but obviously it can. And then the government's allowing U.S. oil companies to avoid tens of billions of royalties for drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. this is just more and more of, I know it's not funny, but it's more and more of the Bush administration giving in to the oil companies. This has been a mantra of their administration. And I think we've got something coming in, calling in right now.
The lights are flashing.
There we go.
All right, Ed, we will get, hopefully this is Ellen and Nancy on the line. Are you there?
Close the door so I don't hear you.
Are you there? Can you hear me?
Hello.
Okay, we can hear you. Hello there. Say hello.
Hello.
Hello there. You're on the air. Ellen?
Oh, we're on the air.
Ellen, can you hear us? You're on the air. We're listening to you.
Ellen,
hello
can
there.
Can you hear us?
A reminder, this is the Surreal News
Ellen?
Show.
Ellen?
Yes. And we're trying to get Ellen on right now. Unfortunately, I think they dropped her call. So why don't we just play the song while we're waiting?
You're sort of there. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Steve?
Yeah, we can hear you. Are you possibly calling from a cell phone?
No.
You're on a landline? Okay, say hello.
Say hello. We're here.
Okay, good. Be sure and speak up. I'll turn you up as loud as I can go. This is WSLR, and you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello. This is Ellen, and this is Nancy.
Hi there. Hi. Okay, guys, let me just encourage you, talk as loudly as you can, because I have the line turned all the way up to try to hear you as well as we can. And
okay, it's a little bit hard to hear you too, but we'll talk loud.
That's perfect.
That.
Wonderful.
Shout, yeah. Just shout into the line. That's the best. Okay, so we want to start by playing. Yes?
Yeah, there's just a tiny little delay, I think. That's what it is.
Yeah, like an hour delay.
We'll all right. Be on at 10 o'clock.
Let's start by playing your song. I'm sure you've heard this before, but some of our listeners. This is They Lost My Vote. By, I know, Ellen Buxtel and Nancy, I can't pronounce your last name?
Wurzburger.
There you go. Okay, so everybody...
Nancy Wurzburger.
Thank you, Nancy. Everybody listen to this great song about them losing our vote.
Tuesday in November, I took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. Lines were long, but I didn't care. I had a water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. I hit that button, my vote was sent. But now nobody knows exactly where it went. They lost my vote, it isn't fair. I took a stand, doesn't anybody care? They lost my vote now. Where did my ballot go? Oh, oh. After the election, I was filled with pride, waiting for my vote to be verified. Looking for the news of my country's fate. The election was over, now there's no more defeat. I surfed the TV all night long. Wanted to know what was going on. To get me some honest information, I watched Jon Stewart on the comedy station. They lost my vote. It isn't fair. I took a stand. Doesn't anybody care? They lost my vote. Now do you know where did my ballot go? Working the way that it was supposed to be. I just wanted someone to listen to me the way the Constitution promised me. If we can land a rocket ship on the moon, or make a cell phone ring in our favorite tune, we can send sound waves through the air, then voting machines should be counting fair. Anyone can hack the files and push delete. There'd be no proof, and I got no receipt. So let's get the system under control, and the final results will match the exit poll.
All right, there we go. I'm not going to play the whole song right now. We can play some more later. And thank you very much for writing that great song. Now it's very cute.
Well, that's fantastic. You going to be playing that anywhere soon around this town? Or are you going national with it?
I was just over there singing for, I had a couple concerts with the Broward, with the Sarasota Folk Club, and I did a house concert, but I don't think I'll be there anytime real soon. Wasn't planning on it.
Any private playings for Kathy Dent, our supervisor of elections? That's a joke.
No, but Catherine Harris is having a private soiree in her house, I understand, and you're the entertainment. Is that correct?
No.
No. How could we be wrong on that?
Tell us a little bit about the process of writing, and particularly that song, and what was your how did it flow, and how did it develop?
Well, Nancy and I have written several songs together, and when Nancy was the president of the National Organization for Women here in Broward, and very involved politically, and we both were upset with the way the last presidential election turned out, and the whole, all of it surrounding the problem with voting and the votes, and we were just so disgusted, and we started writing the song back then, and just finished it
last year. Yeah.
So it took kind of 2 years for us to let it germinate and get mad enough. And as things kept progressing with the things in the news and people becoming more aware of the problem with voting, we just realized how important it was to finish the song.
And we really based it a lot on our own experience. The listening to John Stewart to get some honest information was really true. Election night, nobody knew what was going on the major networks, and we honestly did watch John Stewart to find out what was really going on.
That's amazing story.
Have you sent John Stewart a copy of your tape? Oh, you definitely should.
Oh, yes, we have.
Yeah, and I just met another woman the other night who told me she sent it to John Stewart, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's had some airplay. Tom Hartman played it on Air America.
He's very good.
And, it's had some airplay around the country. Because it's a subject that, you know, people are really concerned about, you know. And more so, the more we find out about what's really been going on and these voting machines, the more important the subject matter really is.
Well, we've been really focusing on that here at WSLR. We've been having people from the American Way, from Christine Jennings. In fact, we're having someone from People from the American Way, one of the attorneys, come on later on today to talk about the possibility. 9:45 today. He's going to be talking about the ruling that hopefully will be coming up this week to allow outside experts to examine the voting machine. So we're hoping that will happen, and we'll keep you abreast. Just stay tuned to WSLR.
They absolutely should. I mean, third world countries, they have people go in there to monitor the voting. And our country, you know, we leave it to four major companies to take care of it, and they don't have to answer to anybody. It's really crazy.
We need Jimmy Carter here now.
You know, it was fun for me when I first heard the song, because as kind of a child of the 60s and 70s, where music, and particularly folk music, was really a leader of political change and cultural revolution. And it not so much has been in more recent years. And now to hear a song like the one you wrote and some others like it, just make the heart go faster. It's really quite exciting.
Yeah, bring back Phil Oakes.
You guys rock.
Yeah, you really do. We're talking about you guys.
Where did you hear it first?
Let's see. I got sent an email from Kendra Muntz from the Sarasota Alliance for Fair Elections, and there was a link from there. It is the theme song for the ReVote Rally project here in Sarasota.
Yes, isn't that the one on YouTube?
Yes, they put it to a little video showing the event.
Yep, and if you look carefully, you can see me in there in those pictures. And Larry, too.
Very, very, very carefully.
Yeah, I'm in the panoramic shots, the wide body.
That was an awesome rally that you all had. I mean, that is really what we need more of, that kind of stuff.
We really do.
Going on all over the country.
All right, so
I'm so glad that...
Go ahead.
You guys are standing up and not letting this issue die.
I was looking over your website, and there's a number of other interesting, mostly women's issues that you also write other songs about. Domestic violence is one of them. You've taken on some really tough issues and put them to music.
I think that's kind of, for me, something that is an important part of the music. I don't think it's, to me, it isn't worth it if I'm not saying something that is meaningful. And not that everything has to be deep and political, but you know, I think I find that most of my friends who are songwriters write about issues and feelings and stuff that's important to them, and that's basically what I've been doing. And Nancy and I together have been doing. We wrote that song about menopause together too.
A hot topic.
Either,
I'm well, getting flashbacks.
It's a very, very important topic if you're in our age group, believe me. The baby boomers are all experiencing it now.
Yes. Well, I think the three men around this table certainly hear a lot of it.
Oh, yes, we sure do.
Oh, is that why I hear other people laughing?
It's a laugh of familiarity.
Oh, yes, yes. It's a big problem.
All right, this is your cue to plug your website.
Well, my website is www.buckstell.com, and it's spelled B-U-K-S, as in Sam, T-E-L.com. And all of my music is up there, and all the music Nancy and I have written together is up there.
And check it out. We have some, we have a song about peace and a song about being a woman, and Ellen has lots of other wonderful songs that she's written.
I love your guitar work. I love your piano work. It's all wonderful.
Yeah, and we really thank you in this area for the song that brought you onto the show, and appreciate all your music. Thanks a lot.
Great job. Before we let you go,
we're delighted to like the song, and, yep. And we'll be looking for more news about what's happening over there.
Yeah, thanks for the good work you all are doing there, really.
All right, keep it up, and we'll be listening for some more music coming from your direction. And thank you so much. Have a good holiday and a good New Year's.
Thank you, too.
Thank you.
And all your listeners.
Thanks again. Don't lose that vote. All righty.
There we go. That was Ellen Buckstell and Nancy, I'm having a hard time pronouncing her last name, who wrote They Lost My Vote, a great song that we just heard about the re-vote issue. We're going to be having the lawyer call in about 15 minutes. This is WSLR, Low Power FM, 96.5 in Sarasota, Florida. The Surreal News Show, and these views are not those of WSLR, its employees, its board of trustees, or the volunteers, or anybody else. This is a political humor and commentary show. And in the studio here, we have Larry and Steve Squared. Go, guys.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Well, I was struck. I had heard over the last couple of days that John Edwards was going to announce his candidacy for the presidency, and I watched.
Yeah,
TV.
So he had that well orchestrated, right?
Yes, in the work shirt and in the jeans with the shovel in his hand,
with sweat kind of coming off. And I thought, you know,
but wait a minute, what happened the night before? You heard about his website, right?
No,
what happened the night before?
Real stuff. So the night before, he was going to announce it in New Orleans on Thursday. Wednesday night, his site came up with the announcement of his candidacy. They blew it. They pre-announced his candidacy for president. This is Edwards.
That was a surprise to me, really.
Were you not expecting
that?
I think a lot of us were shocked.
Yes.
We thought he was going to be the general manager of the North Carolina A&P down there in Durham.
But well, it was a tough decision. It really was.
I think a lot of the guy, he certainly spent a productive past couple of years, unlike a lot of politicians. But what I thought was, for our surreal newscast, was the sight of a guy wearing, you know, kind of a work shirt and standing with a shovel down there in New Orleans with sweat coming off his brow. Now, no less staged than, you know, someone doing it with a battleship or a flag in the background.
You could tell it was staged because the jeans still had their initial creases in them.
And the shirt had that little tag.
Yeah, exactly.
To get snipped off.
And let me mention that in case of an emergency, the United States is the best one to come up with a quick staged photo op before any other nation.
No one beats us.
We're really good at that.
We are. We're just wonderful in that. We can't show photos on the air. That's the only problem. But
well, in any event, that he was reputed to have taken the week between Christmas and New Year's, which traditionally there is no news happening, to upstage both Obama and Hillary Clinton so that he could get a little piece of the news action as well. And that seems to be in the minds of most pundits, anyway, to round out the key field of Democratic candidates.
Now, he is the non-Hillary. Do you think he's got a good chance against McCain?
Some people would say he's almost the non-everything until he starts to really speak out about what policies. But McCain, they are saying, because of his support for the war and wanting to send more troops in, may have lost some of his luster.
Yeah.
McCain's a very conservative guy.
Yes,
I think a lot of liberals who like him because of what he doesn't like.
Yeah. He did some good work on the campaign financing, although, of course, that's been watered down since.
Yeah, it hasn't really been very effective, has it?
Yeah. But what about this troops, this troop augmentation? It looks like Bush is going to go ahead against the advice of everybody. We talked about this last week. It seems like everyone's telling him, don't increase the troops. Al-Maliki from Iraq is telling him, don't do it. All his generals are doing it. He keeps trying to find someone who will finally agree with him. It looks like he's going to try to increase the troops again.
The thought seems to be that he is so obsessed with this idea of victory. And, of course, his presidency in the country can't really stand another Vietnam, which took us so long to recover from. And yet we can't go and have more and more of our kids killed over there. But I had this dream last night, a surreal moment in which you mentioned, Steve, the possibility of impeachment, that it would be the Republicans that may try to do impeachment proceedings against him because they really are the ones who have the most to lose. And if this guy is really jumping off the deep end and only 12% of the country are behind him,
Is that 12%?
It's 12% now are in favor of sending more troops into the war, according to the news this morning. Then that could really jeopardize the Republicans' chances for even treading water in the next election.
Yeah, we reported earlier on that it was really the Republicans, the church-going Republican supporters, who were the ones who were the most conned by what Bush did. The liberals and a lot of Democrats sort of saw this coming. The Republicans did not. They were behind him, and they felt very betrayed by what Bush did to the country, to the party, to their sons, to the economy, to Katrina. Right. Any stop me anytime, guys.
No, go on. You're on a roll. Go on.
Call back the songwriters. It's music to our ears.
That's right.
The other Gordon Brown is he's kind of middle of the road. Although he led a lot of the impeachment proceedings against Clinton, is a Republican senator from the state of Oregon, and the Oregon is divided into the western half, which is more blue, and the eastern half, which is all desert and farms, which is more red, and he kind of represents the red side of the state. Came out very strongly a couple of weeks ago against the war and against continuing and wanting to bring the troops back home. And I think if it was somebody like a liberal Republican from the East Coast, it would be one thing, but this guy really represents kind of the old bedrock. Mountain states, western states, Republican conservatism.
Yeah, it's a big groundswell. It started with Murtha, who used to be obviously a big hawk, and he's Democrat, obviously. But it's coming down to the Republicans now. They do feel betrayed by George Bush. And there are certainly a lot of very sincere people on both sides of the fence, Republicans and Democrats, who are starting to realize that this was not a good idea.
All right, here's a surreal question for you right on this issue. The APAOL poll asked who is the villain and hero of the year. Okay? So, guys, guess who is the villain of the year. And this came out yesterday.
The villain of the
year? The villain of the year.
Is this in the United States?
In the United States, yeah.
Well, obviously, it couldn't be George Bush. That's too easy.
Or that is George Bush.
Sure. Okay, all right.
Well, okay, so who is the hero of the year?
The hero of the year? Mirtha?
I don't know.
Let me give you a hint. Stop while you're ahead.
George Bush?
George Bush came out both the villain and the hero of the year.
Wow.
Well, if that doesn't snapshot of American politics, I don't know what would be.
Those in touch with reality, those out of touch with reality.
Boy, that's where that 12% came in.
Well, I have a question, a surreal question. If, in fact, by some luck for the Democrats, there's a revote, there is a revote in Sarasota.
And it's not clear, actually, if it would be just Sarasota or Manatee County or all of District 13. Who knows?
But given the fact that the war actually did play a part in the original campaign, what do you think might happen if there were a revote? Do you think there would be, it would be close again, or do you think Republicans in this? See, I'm not so sure how much local Republicans reflect what we're just talking about and reading about in the national scene, whether. They're more, the Republicans here are more diehard and more.
Well, generally, it is, obviously, it is a Republican area, and we've always had Republicans representing here, but I don't think Vern Buchanan is that popular with Republicans. He's not a big, strong figure, and I think the revote would probably go to Christine Jennings. Buchanan certainly hasn't done anything to distinguish himself since the election.
He's kept a very low profile.
Yes,
I wonder
if
that's intentional, if he's being cautious.
He said sort of move on, we can discuss this issue later. Everybody's got revoting and voting issues on their mind. He seems out of step with the rest of District 13, who is talking about the revote, and he's sort of, oh, let's just move on. I don't think he looked very good in this discussion. I think he could have come out. Whereas Christine Jennings came out and said from their organization, seat provisionally Buchanan so the people of District 13 can be represented. And then later on we'll figure out what's going on and change that if we need to. She was very magnanimous. She said, I'm not going to concede it, but we should have somebody representing us. I thought that was very magnanimous of her.
She's coming off in a much more, I could say, presidential manner, in a much more dignified manner. And
her consistent theme has been that this is about the right to vote. This is not about my campaign. And people have had a hard time believing her or her opponents, and yet her behavior has been very, very consistent that this is about guaranteeing that every vote is counted.
All right, in about 7 minutes, we're going to have the lawyer for that lawsuit coming on. Let's move on because we're coming right back there.
Yeah, global warming claims its first victim. Rising seas swallow an inhabited island. Actually, the whole island of Lakachara in India was actually swallowed right now, just like Atlantis.
Doesn't exist anymore.
Doesn't exist anymore. Next, watch out on Longboat Key.
Wow. Well, lucky for us, the overwhelming majority of Americans believe in angels because they may be the last ones to come in and save the globe here. There was a report that most Americans, if asked whether they believe in angels or not, are likely to say, yes, they do.
What was interesting about that report was the definition of angels, which could have been just a friend doing a nice deed or some type of ethereal being. It cut across many religions, which is interesting, too. And, you know, angels, good Samaritans, if you look into the details, which I read that article, a little bit more details, a little bit more believable when you kind of expand the definition. Going back to global warming for 1 second, we were talking about the bears, and some of the bears have changed. They're hibernating. They're not hibernating anymore. And this is according to The Independent, December 13th. In northern Spain, a scientist reported that the bears who usually hibernate because there's not enough bees and butterflies and swallows and things like that around and food around for them have stopped hibernating because now there's food available. So they go out and there's food and they just don't go to sleep.
Speaking of hibernating in Spain, do you know that they're starting to stop the siesta now in Spain?
No kidding.
Yeah, they realized it wasn't very economically efficient. Well, I hate to
see
that go.
I'll sleep on that.
Well, with all the Coke and the dollar bills there, they're probably having a hard time to fall asleep anyway.
That's true. Well, Iran's oil revenue could disappear by 2015.
Interesting article there.
Very interesting. Yes.
So why don't we use economic issues and sanctions to get things done, like some of the senators are doing, and even our own senator here in this state went over and spoke to some of the Iranians and also Syrians and did negotiation, in spite of Bush saying, don't go there.
Yeah, Arlen Specter was over there. He's a Republican, but he's been always very, very independent.
And Nelson was over there,
Nelson,
too.
Yeah, that's right. It looks like we're going to have to bypass the central government in order to get things done. Kind of like Schwarzenegger did in California, did his own treaty with another country.
And it seems, from where I'm sitting, that the states, local governments are kind of picking up the slack because our own federal government has been so negligent in doing any kind of diplomacy at all.
Well, George Bush is very clear that he sees the role of the president being primarily commander-in-chief of the military. And that's a very narrow definition of the role of the president, probably one of the most narrow aspects of that role. And so the vacuum that's created in other components are being picked up by other people.
That is. And what happened to the State Department? You said,
Where's Condoleezza Rice?
Where is she? What's she doing?
Buying shoes.
Wow.
Playing piano.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be very difficult for the next president to try to resize the presidency back to what it's historically been. And you look at somebody like all the commemorations of Gerald Ford, including your ski slope story. Mm-hmm. As a guy who really did try to pull in everything to get all the people together and get some consensus and get, at least if not moving to get moving ahead, things stabilized. And the next president's going to have a very, very big job, much bigger than probably anybody has in the last three or four presidencies.
Well, revamping the diplomatic corps is going to be the very first job. They should make Bill Clinton Secretary of State. Somebody's got a decent understanding of world culture and can have an understanding of the issues.
That would be very interesting, especially if Hillary is president.
Well, yeah. I guess that's not going to happen.
Would you go back to your office, please?
Yes. I know. Well, you know, I read Hillary's book, and it's a brilliant book. In fact, it's much better than Bill Clinton's book. Bill Clinton's book is so long, you could tell.
I found it's too long. I had a hard time getting through it.
The only good thing about it was I was sure he didn't have a co-writer. He didn't have a ghostwriter, because any ghostwriter would have edited that thing down to about half of what it is right now. But Hillary's book was extremely well written. I think she'd make a great candidate. Like a lot of people, I'm not sure how electable she is. I don't know why this is. Every once in a while, I talk to Republicans and I ask them, what do you think about Hillary? And there's a degree of animosity that's completely out of proportion to anything she's ever done.
Is it towards her or is it towards her husband?
It's toward her. It's what people hate her, and I don't know why that is. She tried to get a health initiative passed, and people think maybe she exceeded her mandate. But boy, I wish we had had that passed when she tried to.
My guess is that if she were nominated, she would win every blue state.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And then some. I don't think that there'd be any. I think that she would bring so many people out who didn't vote for Kerry, didn't even come out for the last election. It would be amazing. I actually think she would have an easier time getting elected president than getting the nomination in the
first
place.
You think so?
I have that sense.
That's an interesting perspective on that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd love to see her. I'd love to see Barack. I think both of those would be good. I think it's going to
Barack would be a dream come true.
He would be. I think it's going to fall down to John Edwards again, though, because I think he's possibly going to be perceived as the more electable of all the candidates.
I don't think John Edwards is a bad guy.
No, he's not.
I mean, I think he's more authentic. If you compare him to the Republicans, and I'm really interested to see who the Republicans bring forward besides McCain, who is very conservative.
But Romney,
who's also very conservative.
I think the war is going to bring down McCain. His support for the war and his support for increasing the troop levels, I think that's going to bring down McCain.
And it'll be interesting to see how people react to Giuliani if he decides to step in.
Oh, I don't like him at all. Can I just mention one? This is a story that's tough to put out in the news, and this is about a D.C. sex blogger, but it has some implications kind of behind the scenes. And then we have Mitchell We have Reggie Mitchell calling in from the People for the American Way to give us the revote. He's the lawyer. And you're listening to WSLR, Low Power FM and 96.5 in Sarasota, Florida. So Jessica Cutler is a sort of blog slut. She works for a senator, and she was having affairs with many people in Washington, etc. And she put some information on a blog site and then subsequently was sued for that. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, not just another, you know, sex story in Washington, which is not a real big news, is that this court case, which is coming down in California, according to The Guardian, December 27th, may have implications for Facebook and MySpace in terms of what information you can put on a blog that affects somebody else's personal life. You can put in whatever you want about your own personal life, but the lawsuit is, can you mention other people's personal lives? And this may be the end of Facebook and MySpace, this court case, which is currently going on about a DC sex scandal.
Well, you can't libel someone who's a private citizen. That's the law. I guess if it's true, there's no reason why you couldn't put that on a blog as easily as you could write a book about it. But like I said, it's the libel laws which would probably be the laws which are effective. And they're slightly different for public citizens and for private citizens. So I think the libel laws are what we're talking about right now. If she would say, for example, well, I slept with this guy and he was terrible, that might be libel. But if she could prove it true, then it wouldn't be libel. Interesting, isn't that?
So the truth is a defense. The truth would be the defense.
The truth would be the defense. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. What's the distinction between private citizens and public figures? They're more open to being attacked publicly than a private citizen would be.
Exactly.
You can say more about them.
They're more of a target.
So then it might. What if the politician went to court and claimed that he was not important enough to be considered the target of libel?
I mean, this is
going to really make a lot of politicians stop and think. If that's
yeah, it is amazing how Facebook and MySpace have really taken over the generation of college kids right now. There's not a college kid around that doesn't have a profile on MySpace, and the employers are looking at that right now. So anybody listening right now, be very careful, because future employers will be looking as to what you post.
Steve, that's a real good point. When I saw that in the paper, I thought, look at how many, look how it is. If a politician runs for office, that goes back to, did you smoke dope as a kid? And that can torpedo you. But then if you're much more self-disclosing on MySpace, and then that becomes something that employers or future voters look at, you can really seal your fate before you even hit the age of reason.
In the stupid criminal category, there was actually a guy who put pictures of his robbery on MySpace. Well, of course, the police monitor that, and now he is serving time.
Yeah, well, so be careful what you put on your own website, folks.
All right, let me give you a little surreal spin on this. Did you know that in England there is no free speech? It is not part of the English court system. And there are suits, libel suits, basically for lots of things going on. There's even a branch of government that you have to throw things by, a censorship part of the English government, before anything can be published. And they'll tell you whether they're going to sue you in advance or not. And they basically determine what's published in England. England does not have free speech. Many people don't understand or realize that.
Does that apply to radio and other media as
Everything.
Well? Everything. So if I were to say something about Rush Limbaugh, who I admire tremendously as another fellow radio personality.
He keeps his mouth close to the mic. That's
absolutely.
What I really
that's right.
That's not easy to do.
No, that certainly
as
isn't.
We know.
Especially when you're popping pills. Oh, did I say that? God. So if I said something about him, I would have to tell him in advance that I'm saying this.
I don't have the details, but you might, and you might get sued anyway, and there's many, many, many more liable suits than there are here in the United States. It's much, much easier. There's suits like that
all
the
time. And yet the tabloid press in London is much more expose focused than the press is here, it seems.
It's interesting that way.
Yeah.
I guess they're allowed to libel the royal family, though. That's okay. They're public figures.
And that's so much fun. How could you deprive them of the pleasure?
Oh, yeah.
Well, China has plans to prevent certain people from adopting the children. You know, there's a big market for adopting Chinese kids. And according to the AP, China is going to prevent people that are single, overweight, or older from adopting kids from China.
So if your BMI is over a certain number, you just won't get the kid.
All right, what's a BMI?
The body mass index.
There you go. All right, let's go, and we're going to have Reggie Mitchell on the phone for the people from the American Way telling us about the revote issue. Reggie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How you doing?
Great, and Reggie was on our revote show a number of weeks back, right before the rally, the big rally that we had. Did you see all the pictures on the YouTube of that rally? It was great.
Absolutely. I saw it. It was exciting looking at all the footage of there.
And earlier on this show, we had Ellen Buxtel and Nancy Wertheim, who wrote They Lost My Vote on our show, telling us about the music they wrote to go along with that.
Yeah, that should be one of the greatest hits of 2006. They
great
played
song.
That song at the rally.
Is a great song. Hi, Reggie. This is Larry, and Steve, too, is here, and we were the three of us along when you appeared here last time. So we're very excited to have you back again.
So tell us, what's happening? Is this judge coming up with a vote with a is he going to allow us to look at the machines or not?
Yeah, he hasn't given any indication of when he's going to come out with his decision. We went over the course of 2 days for half days each in his courtroom, and he extended it. He was going to cut us off at 12 o'clock on Wednesday, the 20th, but he extended it as far as he could until about 3 o'clock because he travels back and forth between counties. And so both sides were required to submit briefs of like a closing summary of their closing arguments to the court by that Friday. And after that, by 12 noon, and after that, we don't know when he's going to come out with the decision. But obviously, I was very impressed with the presentations made, and feel pretty comfortable that he ought to side with the plaintiffs and allow us the possibility of discovery.
He's giving you no indication as to when he's coming up with that decision.
No, he didn't say, and so I guess we'll just kind of have to check the document online or check with the court to find out when. But you know, probably in the beginning of the new year is when he'll come out with it.
Mm-hmm. Reggie, do you find interest fading a little bit with this, or do you think it's as strong as it ever was?
That's the danger with I think with the public in general, there might be some interest fading because the media doesn't have it in the paper every day as when it first came out. But for those folks who in Sarasota who are diehard certain that the right thing ought to occur, I don't think they've lost interest, and so. Shows like this show and other major newspapers are still calling to kind of follow the case closely, but it's not an everyday sort of story, but it's still out there.
I understand there's a lot of international coverage on this story as well.
I mean, absolutely. It's kind of, you know, ironic. America is supposed to be a first world country, and it's supposed to be sort of the model for democracy. I mean, we lead the world and showing the rest of the world how we can have a fair and just democracy. So it's ironic that allegedly we're the ones violating what we try and bring to other countries like Iraq, a democracy, and democracy's threatened by not having your votes counted properly. And so we've frowned upon other countries for years for fixing elections, and we just can't allow this kind of thing to go on in our democracy.
Reggie, besides asking the courts to rule on the source code, what are other elements of your strategy in this whole effort for us and for our listeners, and how are things going there?
Well, I mean, I don't think I can get too much into strategy, but in our complaint, it says that there are two tiers to this. One is getting access to the hardware and the software to find out if something about it malfunctioned and didn't correctly register votes, and that's one part of it. The other part of it is what did state and county officials know if they, even if it wasn't malicious, even if it wasn't, even their witnesses for the state conceded, for ESNS conceded that if people were allowed to vote the way they intended to go, if their vote would have been registered properly, if they weren't confused by it, then another candidate other than the one that was certified would have won. And so on that basis alone, we got to get to there's two parts to this. There's confusion, and what did the state and county officials know about that confusion, and did they properly prevent that confusing from keeping people to vote the way they intended to vote, and then there's the machine malfunction. And so whatever the case, election reform has to come from whatever was the root cause to make sure that this doesn't happen again. So that's one thing that we're strongly interested in after this case. But right for this case, it's important that we fix this. This case deals with this particular election and says if people were confused or if their votes weren't counted because of machine malfunction, we think there ought to be a revote so that their votes can be properly registered.
Who are the plaintiffs and who are the defendants in this case?
The plaintiffs, initially it was Christine Jennings as one half of the side of the plaintiffs. She filed since she was affected in this election. And then there are 11 voters in Sarasota counties, and that's who we represent, the voter plaintiffs. And so the lead plaintiff is Ellen Fetter, but there's a whole list of 11 persons who are listed that are suing to try and get a revote in this case.
And then this is a good time to plug People for the American Way, because you're representing
I'm Florida Legal Counsel with People for the American Way Foundation. And so that's what we do. It's what we do on an ongoing basis. And so we're one of the attorneys for the 11 plaintiffs. And then you have the ACLU of Florida, you have the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and you have Voter Action.
And who are the defendants?
The defendants are it's required in the challenge statute for all the members of the Florida Canvassing Commission. So Governor Bush, State Senator Daniel Webster, and I'm trying to think who is the third. Tom Gallagher, the Chief Financial Officer. So those are required. Those are necessary parties to this action, and along with the Secretary of State Sue Cobb, since she is over the Division of Elections that certifies the machines, and also the Sarasota County Canvassing Commission. They've been brought in as parties because they're in charge of elections in the county of Sarasota. So you have the judge, the chair of the county commission, and the supervisor of elections for the Sarasota County Canvassing Commission.
That's Kathy Dent.
Kathy Dent. And also there's Vern Buchanan, who's a party. Kathy Dent is supervisor of elections, and Vern Buchanan, since he was the candidate that was certified as the winner, despite what may have actually what the voters intended, he's also a party.
Do each of them have their own legal counsel in this regard?
Yes, the Canvassing Commission, they have lawyers with the county, so the county attorney. I think Kathy Dent also has Ron Lebaski, who represents a lot of the state supervisors of election. There's a firm, the state has a firm, Peter Antonacci and Alan Winsor of, what's the firm? Gray. Now the name escapes me. I'm having a senior moment.
Who's paying for all this high-priced legal help?
Well, the parties are paying for it. So Vern Buchanan is paying for his lawyer. The state canvassing commission. The state of Florida is going to pay for that law firm.
The taxpayers, in other words.
Right, the taxpayers and the counsel for the chief financial officer. He represents simply the chief financial officer, so they're paying for that, and so essentially the taxpayers are paying for all but Vern Buchanan.
And who pays for your services?
Well, we do it pro bono, so we try and have fundraisers to raise the monies needed for it, but all of the four organizations have agreed to split the cost pro bono for the 11 voters.
And what should we be looking for as the next step? The judge's ruling, and would both parts of the complaint be ruled on, or just the part about the source code?
This is just, and that's important to distinguish. This just says that we can get on with the business of discovery. We have theories of what caused the problems. The other side has theories. They spent a lot of time suggesting that we should listen to their theory, which is simply voter confusion. They've conceded that. But they're trying to use that to prevent us from getting to the evidence where we can explore our theory. So this, when the judge makes a ruling, it doesn't go to the merits of who's right or who's wrong.
Okay.
It just says that we can get to the evidence and explore our theory.
Go over again for our viewers' sake. What are your theories?
Our theories, they're twofold. One is that something within the hardware or the software or the way that the ballots, these personal electronic ballots, all of this stuff is kind of digital and electronic. There's something in them themselves or the way they interacted with each other to do something different from what the voters intended. And so when, you know, voters complain that when I pressed the button and tried to vote for this particular candidate, it didn't register that way. And that's that we have in the public records and all of that, that kind of thing was going on. And so an expert testified it may be something in the programming to cause that. It may be something in the way that they interacted with each other to cause that. And so that was testified at court. That's one theory of machine malfunction. The other theory is the way the ballot was designed, was it designed that it was so confusing and people were confused about not being able to vote for the candidate of their choice? And if so, did they know far enough in advance and were able to try and prevent that kind of confusion from going on?
This is beyond the court case then, and then into discovery. And I know it's more technical, and I'm not particularly technical, and probably a lot of our listeners aren't either. But is there a chance that there was mischief and that in the source code that you get that whatever might have been there has been corrected in the documents
receive?
Or and is there a process of discovery that would unearth that as well?
And that's what's been suggested. Again, I'm not an expert. I've been trained in information systems, but I haven't practiced it for a while. But that's the theory, that if somebody went in and through the trouble of trying to cover the tracks, possibly you're able to determine. It's like breaking the seal on a bottle of medicine that has the seal, that you'll be able to tell that somebody's been in there that shouldn't have been in there, and things were changed that shouldn't have been changed. And so, you know, is it possible if you're thorough enough and if you have enough time to cover all of your tracks, that may be possible. And so if that's the case, we'll never know. But there's more likely that didn't happen because of the security involved or because of all of the necessary steps you'd need to uncover your tracks, that maybe if somebody did do that, and we're not suggesting that somebody did that,
right,
but we can see with all technologies that it is possible for mischief. So nobody's saying that we know that for certain, but if it did happen, it's possible to trace it.
Okay, another question. We're coming towards the top of the hour, but give us the big picture in terms of what are the deadlines for the state of Florida, for the House, the U.S. House, for the court case. What happens by when, and what are those deadlines?
The only deadline that we know of is on, I think it's January 4th, they have to seat somebody or they have to make a decision not to seat somebody. So that's beyond our control, and the House Administration Council has to decide with this new Congress led by Democrats what to do. Do they fill the seat or do they not fill the seat? Do they fill the seat conditionally? So they have several options. It seems that a lot of suggestion is that the Democrats don't want to be seen as obstructionists, and they want to get their agenda pushed in the first 100 days. So it's probable that they'll probably seat somebody. And since Vern Buchanan was certified as the winner, it may be possible that they seat him. But it's all with the understanding, just as it is in the statute, that even though somebody's seated, if the court determines that they're not the real winner, they can unseat that person and put in the real winner.
Yes, and
Congress
Christine
has
Jennings,
the ability to do that as well.
Christine Jennings has come out publicly saying that Vern Buchanan should be conditionally seated.
Right, and so that seems to be consistent with what the Democrats are trying to accomplish. And that she said, and to her credit, that the county should not go unrepresented during that time. So she's saying that he ought to be seated conditioned upon whatever this court determines, and then Congress, by Constitution, can decide who it seats and who it unseats, and they can unseat them despite whatever the court does. And obviously we hope that we follow the court. The court has a chance to go through its course, and that we have a chance to get at that discovery.
And by law, I need to say it's WSLR, Low Power FM, 96.5, Sarasota, Florida.
Reggie, I can listen to you talk about this all day. It's so fascinating. You describe it very well. But you know, I think for the voters here, even though there may be a decline in public attention, the issue is as acute as it was from the very beginning. And the knowledge that you folks are putting up the kind of fight you are means, I think, a great deal to all of us. I'm in Manatee County, and we have the the Optiscan machine, so we're not directly affected by what happened. We're not the underlying voter issue is not one that we share, but we certainly share the representation issue. And give you a lot of thanks for the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. And what you're saying, what you hit on, is exactly why we're fighting so much. Because, you know, even though I'm in an optical scan county and we have a supervisor that we think very highly of, but when we vote for statewide offices or federal offices that affect the entire state, president, U.S. senator, it's these other counties that may not have their votes registered properly that affect our vote, affect the strength of our vote. So
right.
we're fighting on with this issue, not just because this election doesn't affect who controls Congress anymore. That was never our concern. Our concern is for 2008 presidential election and for all elections, past and present, that people have confidence. Because this affects whether or not people register to vote. This affects whether people come out to vote. If they don't feel that their vote is going to be registered properly, that affects our democracy in so many ways that we don't have time to go into all of them. So it's real important to all of our groups that we just have a fair election process in place.
Okay, voter turnout is such a huge issue for us. Anything that negatively affects voter motivation is just very, very significant.
Exactly.
Okay, so Vern Buchanan, his representative, was on this show, and she said that the law was followed, the letter of the law was followed in the previous election. If you have an issue, bring it up for the next election. Just move on. That is their stance.
Well, I mean, obviously it's going to be their stance. They want to seat their candidate, and we understand that. Obviously we don't agree with that. We're following the law, the statute that says you can challenge an election, and it says the basis for which you can challenge an election 10 days after the election has been certified. So if they point to, well, the state certified them, well, the state was required to certify them by the law. I mean, whether they agree with it or not, the state had no evidence, direct evidence of fraud, because they can't get discovery, and they didn't really press for discovery. And so that same law that they're using to shield them is what we're referring to as we challenge this election. And the grounds to challenge an election, if proper votes weren't registered, and that's one of the grounds in our complaint. So all of us are using the law. We just use it in different ways. And our the way we're using it is to get at the truth of what happened in that election. I think the two candidates, as you can understand, they want to use the law to try and get seated. And
Reggie,
we understand that. That's what candidates and parties are about.
Do you expect that after this ruling comes out, there'll be an appeal from either side?
This will go on for a long time. Hopefully, I think it's going to go in our favor. I hope it goes in our favor, and if so, I hope the other side doesn't challenge, but I'd be pretty disingenuous to think that it's going to stop there. It'd be very difficult. In the middle of a trial to challenge a particular aspect of it, is possible to do that with an interlocutory kind of order from an appeal court, and there's probably going to be an appellate challenge on that issue, whether we get access to it or not.
So we're looking for a long slog with this.
Well, because it's of such great importance, I don't think it's going to take years like other trials might take, because it affects such a matter of public importance. And so I think other courts will rule, but sort of expeditiously. I mean, the way the statute, when we filed, you have, you know, folks have 10 days to respond by statute. So the state recognizes that the whole issue, if it was allowed to drag out the normal course of trials, you'd never solve an election problem, because the issue would become moot after, you know, 4 or 5 years after the problem occurred. If that's when courts ruled, well, you'd never solve an election problem, because, you know, this particular office only lasts 2 years for federal office. And so we think the courts are going to respond a lot faster and expeditiously, although fairly, much more expeditiously than normal.
Thank you, Reggie. We've been listening to Reggie Mitchell on WSLR, Low Power FM in Sarasota, Florida, 96.5. Reggie, you're the best.
Thank you for having me again.
Thanks,
you're
Reggie.
The best.
Now, we may ask you to come back as there's more information.
Anytime. I love talking about this. This
That's
is an
terrific.
Interesting case.
Thanks
Very
a lot.
Good. Thank
All
you
right.
so much.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Okay, this is the Surreal News Show, 96.5, Low Power FM, WSLR, in Sarasota, Florida.
And we've had in our studio Larry and Steve Squared.
It's great to be here, and great to have our Friday morning with the listeners and talk about some of the crazy things that are happening in the world around us.
It's been a year, guys. What a year.
Wow.
Been the lows and the highs and all everything in between.
Next year we roll the lucky seven, so we'll see what happens next year.
All right, so we're going to take you out with a little bit of surreal music, and then we're going to play They Lost Our Vote one more time. And thank you. Listen in next week.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye now.
Nobody knows exactly where it went. They lost my vote. It isn't fair. I took a stand. Doesn't anybody care? They lost my vote. Now do you know where did my ballot go? Whoa, whoa. After the election, I was filled with pride. Wait for my vote to be verified. Looking for the news of my country's fate. The election was over, now there's no more defeat. I surfed the TV all night long. Wanted to know what was going on. To get me some honest information, I watched Jon Stewart on the comedy station. They lost my vote. It isn't fair. I took a stand. Doesn't anybody care? They lost my vote. Where did my ballot go? Wanted to make sure that democracy was working the way that it was supposed to be. I just wanted someone to listen to me the way the Constitution promised me. If we can land a rocket ship on the moon, or make a cell phone ring in our favorite tune, send sound waves through the air, then voting machines should be counting fair. Anyone can hack the files and push delete. There'd be no proof, and I got no receipt. So let's get the system under control, and the final results will match the exit poll. They lost my vote. It isn't fair. I took a stand. Doesn't anybody care? They where did my ballot go? Lost my faith in the government when they changed the rules without my consent. Don't wanna be nobody's experiment. Just wanna know where my ballot went. They lost my vote. I made my choice. Does anybody care to hear my voice? They lost my vote. Was that the plan? Nobody knows that I took a stand.
You are listening to WSLR, Low Power FM, 96.5 in Sarasota, Florida. And you've heard the surreal news, and we have some more music coming up for you right about now. Thank you.
Wow.